Rewind the dynamite from the most recent sight. AW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And welcome to the fifth anniversary of Rewind to Dynamite. And we're going to be here for many, many more years to come, which is also now the unofficial tagline for TBS, according to Excalibur. Welcome to the program. It's John Pollock and Waiting coming moments. Yes, you can look at your clock. Still, moments after Dynamite concluded. Way, we are live at 10:40 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
Well, I guess we're a society where more is always better, bigger is always better, and overruns can't be over enough.
I guess so. They weren't over with me, but yes, bigger means better, apparently. We're going to find out, because here to join us about the big news of the day, finally, after everybody's prognostications, podcasts, analysis, guesswork, it's come to an end. We got the announcement of AEW's renewal, and joining us here to break things down from WrestleNomics and my co-host on Pollock and Thurston, the Brandon Thurston, who is joining me. Hello, Brandon.
Hello. We can officially retire all the podcasts. It's been a great two-year, whatever, five-year run, whatever you want to call it. And it's great to really have everything come to an end today.
The one casualty of this whole thing that nobody beyond me is going to truly appreciate is that Brandon had the ultimate graphic ready to go for a breaking news show.
Oh, I did. We're not going to get to use it now.
No, it's unfortunately just for my eyes only that we did not get to use this today. But the announcement did come down. It looked like a Variety got the heads up on everybody. And we got the quite a few details here. So All Elite Wrestling and Warner Brothers Discovery reached a new multi-year rights deal. The financial terms of the deal were not disclosed, but Variety notes that it is valued at upwards of $150 million per year, more on that later, when all elements are factored into the equation. AEW's Dynamite and Collision programs will remain on TBS and TNT respectively, but AEW will begin streaming their live programming on HBO Max simultaneously for U.S. subscribers. That will be available to stream on demand in January 2025. Company President Tony Khan gave a statement about the renewal, and there were comments from Kathleen Finch that we can get into as well. The deal includes enhanced distribution rights across social media, in addition to potential new AEW programming on linear and digital platforms. AEW's live pay-per-views will be up on Max later in 2025. All marketing and promotion of those events will be exclusively centered on Max. So the key takeaway we can start first with, Brandon, is the value of this deal. On the surface, we're looking at Dynamite, Collision, and the pay-per-view component that is not as like black and white as we were looking at it before, in that they're going to be available on Max for a discounted price, but you're not going to be shelving your traditional pay-per-view market either for people that are buying it elsewhere. You'll still be able to derive some revenue from other pay-per-view outlets.
Right, so we have controversy already. Yes. 150 million AAV is what Variety had reported. 170 is what Sports Business Journal is reporting. So I think that might have something to do with the fact that there's pay-per-view that's a part of this, and maybe some of what's being calculated in those all elements that they're referring to might be the pay-per-view. So it seems to me that maybe part of this deal is cannibalizing their current pay-per-view business, which I think is around $20 million a year. I think there's a question about, like, domestically in terms of the digital pay-per-view, if Fight Triller is going to continue to carry. I've sent a message to Fight, to Triller, asking if they're going to continue to carry pay-per-views digitally in January in the United States. That's a key there. I have little doubt that they're going to continue to carry it in international markets, but whether Max is the only place to get a digital pay-per-view for AEW going forward, I could see that being the case, but we'll try to find out. But traditionally, you'll be able to get, presumably you'll be able to get pay-per-view through cable and satellite. unclear what social rights mean. They have what is the adjective, enhanced social rights? Maybe they're able to tweet and share video clips or something like that.
Maybe it's they get the rights to the TikTok account for AEW. I don't know what enhanced social content will mean for them. It's kind of like this larger term. Once all there elements,
here's our graphic. That's the
beautiful.
Yeah, look at that. I mean, one that maybe it's one that we'll get some utilization out of his here. I just look at this. This was just a piece of art right here, Brandon Thurston.
The classic David Zaslav with the shades pointing at you. He's in Idaho on his big millionaires resort with all the other media moguls pointing at you with the shades on.
If you are looking, let's go with the $150 million number on its face of the details that we do know. How do you value that figure versus kind of the estimates that the range that you had looking into this in terms of like what does this mean for AEW if we're going with the $150 million figure?
So if we go 150, a long time ago, I caused a stir because I estimated that maybe they would get something like 3x to 5x. Now, that was at a time when AEW's ratings were a lot stronger, and I was comparing it to what the value per viewer hour was with WWE. And you can make an opposite argument that's pretty negative when you look at NXT's deal, which was only $25 million with CW. In any case, I think it depends on how you slice this. This is so complex, but I think, let's say $75 million is the average annual value if Collision had existed all along across those 4 years, 5 years. Then we go from like 75 to 50, which is, I think, 2x, right? Wait, no. That's what's yeah. I have to bring up. Am I right about that?
75, no. Yeah.
75 times 2 is 150?
Yes.
Okay. And so that's 2x. If it was 3x, that would be, 225, I think. It's a good deal. It's a good enough deal for, I think, I'm writing an article I've mostly written, probably publish it tomorrow, but I think this is good enough for them to be profitable by, if I can be fairly confident in that. As Tony Khan has basically said, and that's what he's kind of bragged about. I think this is a good deal. Maybe if the ratings were better, if ratings could always be better and you could have a better deal. But this is what they needed. This is within the range of what I think they need to be viable.
This was also reported on by Dave Meltzer at the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, noting the $150 million per year figure, stating sources close to the negotiations said it will wind up substantially over that figure on an annual basis with all components figured in. The deal's for 3 years, the fourth being the option that was outlined by John O'Rahn recently on Puck. The fourth year would be at a substantial increase in price. Rampage will be discontinued, as is reported, while the company is shopping around the new Shockwave show to other networks, as noted in our report on the site, and just adding that Dynamite and Collision would air live on Max, meaning that if you have Max, you would actually be able to watch the shows live if you're on the West Coast, as opposed to the three-hour delay that they would be on, potentially. So I guess the question there would be about Rampage, in that, at least on its face, that would be one less hour of content for this. But again, like, you do have the pay-per-view component baked into this. So it becomes very difficult to just look at it from the previous deal to the new deal. And it remains to be seen. There's no official word that has been given out either by WBD or AEW regarding the state of Rampage.
And I suppose there could still be Ring of Honor maybe thrown in as part of some package. I mean, we're talking about this value, whether it's 150, whether it's 170. That's the value based on only payments from WBD. Mm-hmm. Now, if they make another deal with Fox, perhaps, they're probably not doing that for free. Maybe it's not a lot of money, but it's something additional. It could be Shockwave, could be AEW Ring of Honor, and Tony Khan made it pretty clear back in July that he's very open to rebranding Ring of Honor as AEW Ring of Honor.
And there's also the True TV component that could ultimately just be replays of the programming you're already producing. Like, that was in John O'Rahn's report of something involving True TV. None of that was announced today. going through just the various comments and what details were out there, what are the big questions that you have, Brandon?
Well, where Shockwave is going to go, if it's going to go anywhere. I understand now you're telling me Dave is reporting that that Rampage is just going to go away. So what's going to happen with that? And if there's going to be anything for Ring of Honor, what's whether there's going to be pay-per-view domestically outside of Max, what the discount is going to be, what the price point is going to be. I would say, you know, interestingly, we do know that all the library is going to be on Max.
That's right.
This is only pertaining to U.S. Customers, by the way. None of this apparently pertains to people in Canada or other countries for that matter. But it looks like all the library is going to be on Max. And that would include, presumably, next day, you know, it'd be like watching W content on Hulu. There hasn't been a place for people with any sort of streaming access. If you're a cord cutter or a cord never who's never had access to cable, how do you watch AEW programming? It sounds pretty hard. So there will be a way. Other big questions is what's this going to mean for TV ratings? If you've got your broadcast on TBS and TNT and also on Max streaming, that's going to probably increase your viewership because it's essentially opening up the coverage, which, as we all know, has been in annual decline since like 2014. That's going to bring your coverage from something like, I don't know, 70 million homes. And I was looking, I was perusing the WBDIR site and looking at how many subscribers does Max have. And they reported at the end of June, they had about 52 million subscribers. Now, I'm sure a lot of those subscribers are just people who subscribe to cable and they get HBO. So this is a lot of redundancy here. So how many incremental homes are they going to be in? I don't know. A couple dozen million, you know, 10, 20 million extra homes, something like that. It's going to add to the coverage, and presumably more coverage means more viewership. But is this viewership going to be measured? Are we going to end up with what would appear to be artificially low Nielsen ratings come January 2025? Or, this is a question for Raw on Netflix as well, is Nielsen going to actually cover and give us data for live broadcasts on streaming on a regular basis for things that aren't the NFL? Which it has for the NFL, but not for other things really yet.
Beyond just, you know, the news of AEW getting this deal, it's very big. I would say just more broadly, kind of lost in all of this discussion is the fact that Max is getting into pay-per-view next year. Like, that is not a component that they offer at the meantime. It means mm-hmm. that they are now competing with your ESPN Pluses of the world. And part of the reason they don't have a set date to introduce these pay-per-views is that they are going to be working on that technology to be able to offer pay-per-views. Yeah. And
you view it as competition to what ESPN Plus is doing with UFC?
I think to a degree, yes. Like, to me, this opens up the doors for Max for pay-per-view content. I don't think it's going to begin and end with just AEW and how they may view one-off events and things like that, much like Netflix is introducing it as well with, you know, certain stunt events that they're doing as well.
Yeah.
Wait, what are some of your thoughts today, just in terms of the deal points that have come out, and within a year from now, what time is Dynamite going to be ending most Wednesdays?
I don't think we've seen the last half hour overrun when it comes to Dynamite. You know, maybe it's an anniversary thing, or maybe it's something they can do every single week at this point. Yeah, I mean, no, it's great. I think it's really healthy news, not just for AEW, but also for professional wrestling at large. You know, it feels very much like the next stage of the pro wrestling, I guess, wars, if you want to call them that, between, you know, a very, very clear number one and a very distant number two, that these will be fought on streaming platforms. And you know, it's healthy. It's really healthy for the industry and for professional wrestling.
Yeah, it's pretty unthinkable if we were thinking back to 2017 and imagining that there would be at a minimum two companies strongly competing as they are for talent, for fans too. But the distance between number one and two is large. But there's two big companies that are paying well and paying competitively for wrestling talent, which was just a laughable notion what is that, 7 years ago.
We also, in the Sports Business Journal article, got I mean, this is something that you have been stating for a long time, Brandon, your belief that WBD had some kind of stake in AEW. You asked Tony Khan about this, and it was the most...
Dave asked Tony Khan about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Okay, it was Dave that asked about it. And yes. Tony Khan...
I was revisiting the clips today, so yes.
In this roundabout way, pretty much gave notion to that fact. But in the SBJ article, it did state that WBD also keeps its equity stake in AEW, but the size of it was not disclosed. So yeah. I mean, that seems pretty factual at this point, that WBD does have some kind of ownership. I'd be very curious if that was right from the get-go that they had that, or in that early 2020 renegotiation, if they kind of realized what this property meant to them.
I believe it's right from the get-go, but that's just a belief. I mean, the quote from Tony Khan about a year ago, this was September 2023, so this is just before WrestleDream last year. He was asked by Dave if there was any stake that WBD had. He said that is something that would be between us, but I would also be open to that, to Warner Brothers having a piece or a bigger piece potentially. So very ambiguous response. He didn't deny it, and he also my decoding of that is, yeah, they own a minority stake. I'm not going to confirm or deny that. I want to keep my dealings with my biggest business partner as private as possible and protected as possible and not do anything that might potentially upset them or mess stuff up for us. But yeah, they own a stake. But he did point out that he has complete control. He said he has all the voting power. So I assume he has all or virtually all the voting power. And as we know from our lessons in WWE, you can have multiple classes of shares in a company where one person has a disproportionate amount of the control, despite others having larger portions of the shares. You could have somebody like Vince McMahon who has 10 times as many votes for each individual share that he has, and he can have a third of the company, but at 80% of the votes. There sounds like there's something similar happening there at AEW where WBD may have a minority stake that either has no voting power or has diminished voting power.
As we look at AEW entering this next phase of the company and reaching this level of profitability, this is a very, very healthy deal. Where do you see Tony Khan putting a lot of these resources in terms of like growing out the company? Like, what do you see as sort of the next phase of AEW now that this renewal is behind them, and for the next 3 to 4 years, they're on very solid footing. Like, where do you see AEW putting a lot of this revenue towards?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have great answers to that. This is where maybe I'm kind of an AEW pessimist in that. I would be a little worried about the popularity of AEW going forward, and if it's going to be strong enough to continue to sustain ratings that are as highly ranked as they are now, which in the case of Dynamite specifically is quite strong. But you know, I don't know. I mean, this trajectory of attendance is not encouraging. The trajectory of ratings, while good enough for now, is not encouraging. And I think AEW has been captured by the very thing that provided its opportunity, which was many of the creative philosophies and production choices of Vince McMahon. Another former WWE wrestler joining AEW tonight, in addition to that, and not just talent, but people in production as well, who have been basically drawn out of WWE in its worst content era, arguably ever, to join AEW to be what is supposed to be an alternative to WWE, while WWE, on the other hand, has become more popular than it was in many years.
While we have you here, we did want to just quickly discuss the NXT numbers from their debut on CW. They ended up doing 895,000 viewers and a 0.26 in the demo. So it's like right in the range, I think, of what we had guesstimated.
Yes, you were today. Very accurate. I think you said 0.25 and 900, and it was 895.26. You were almost right on.
That's it. Well, once in a while. So this was one, though. It was interesting once you put up the quarter hours to see in hour two, not so much in the 18 to 49 demo, but of overall viewership, it would seem like there was a portion that did want to see the J.D. Vance, Tim Walz showdown, which attracted 43 million viewers across all the networks that carried the debate.
Yeah, you do see that a bit of a sag here in the second hour, and that is when the debate started. The debate started at 9, so maybe people wanted to see J. J.D. Vance and Tim Walz have a cordial conversation about American politics.
The presidential debate, not enough to cause anything, but this is an NXT crowd. They want to know who's the next in waiting.
It wasn't a huge impact. You know, in NXT a few weeks ago went against the presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, and that appeared to have no effect on the rating, at least on a whole average from week to week. It did a very similar rating to what it did in surrounding weeks. But this was, I have to say, this was, you know, this is kind of what we predicted, but I have to say that's a success. It's a success we expected it to be. The biggest demo number year to date, as we looked at earlier today, is a 0.15. This did a 0.26, which is almost double that. WWE and CW put out a press release, so they're clearly thrilled about it and they want attention. Sending their press release out around the same time that the WBD AWTV deal press releases were being sent out, but they're clearly very happy with it, and it's the top show for their network year to date in the demo, not in total viewership, which is there's that awards show did over 1 million viewers on CW.
Yeah, but I mean. Geez, a 0.15, that's your biggest demo number of the year. Like, I don't see NXT falling under a 0.15 unless there's some significant circumstances affecting that. So it's like NXT should be a major fuel for CW for Tuesday nights. Next week, it will be week two of NXT, which is also on the road, featuring Randy Orton. And we did see tonight that Title Tuesday will go head-to-head with that show, but only for 1 hour, because Dynamite will air from 9 till 11, while NXT will go from 8 till 10. And as we did see last night, it appears there will be no overruns for NXT. So there will be no
bleed over. You're not going to see any overruns, I think, with this being a broadcast network that it has to hand it over to affiliates. I would think now this will be a different case when it's going against another wrestling show, if even for an hour. But I would think, you know, it would be a surprise thing, I guess, if NXT's normal rating, once things even out here after several weeks, I guess, you know, maybe 20% lower than what this debut did, which would still be about a 0.20. I guess this kind of tells you can kind of expect similar ratings on CW as on USA, which is, you know, which is kind of what I was saying for many months here, is that I think that the factors will be offsetting. It's a lower profile broadcast network. USA is a higher profile cable network, but the reach is greater because it's CW and people with antennas can pick it up. So I think it's going to be about a break even for viewership for them. And it's going to be on a network that really needs the viewership, as you know, CW struggles to put up numbers that are similar to halfway decent cable networks.
All right. Well, Brandon will have, I'm sure, much more coming up this Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern time, where he timed this out. The big news story of the year coincides with
everything is intentional.
The free edition of WrestleNomics Radio, which you can send your questions in to Brandon at WrestleNomics.com. That he takes each week. Ask him every question imaginable, from what does this mean? What does this mean in the grand scheme of everything? He will answer all of those questions on Sunday.
Yes.
And you can also check out our show from earlier today, where we were discussing the different topics attached to this TV deal, and joined by guest Steve New, that everybody is chatting about.
Is everyone chatting about that? Is that getting some aggregation?
I know it's crossed over when I get texts and DMs. But it seems to be people enjoyed the interview. So there you go. Our AEW Wrestlers Misclassified is the title of today's show. And you can catch me and Brandon Wednesdays at 1 Eastern. And we thank you very much for staying up late with the extra edition of AEW Dynamite, tacking on 30 minutes at the end of it.
Yes, I'm usually not up this late. But for the biggest overrun in AEW history, you do make exceptions.
Well, I mean, it only comes around every so often. Hopefully,
every 5 years.
This will not be a habit. I hope not. Thank you very much, Brandon.
All right. See you guys.
Thank you, Brandon.
All right. Wei, was there anything else you want to add about the AEW deal? For those in Canada, because I know I will get these questions. It's really not going to change anything. It's still until the TSN deal is up. Like, that's the way you're going to be watching it. We don't have Max in Canada, so that's not going to really affect you. When they do have the pay-per-views on Max or simulcasting, that's not going to be an effect for anyone here in Canada. And that'll go for a lot of international viewers, too.
I could see there being some growing demand for maybe like the archives to, you know, be imported over to some sort of streamer over here. If there's enough outcry and if there's enough of a, you know, venue for AEW to make some extra money.
If someone wants to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah. At the moment, I don't know if I can really see any. I think for a lot of people, how this might affect them is they might have a different country to switch their VPNs to.
That's true. There's always that option. Did you get to see NXT on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I saw most of the show. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I thought it had a great atmosphere. I thought the crowd, like if we are comparing shows, man, I thought the atmosphere in Chicago like blew away tonight in Pittsburgh.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, bigger crowd, I'm assuming, right?
They had over 7,000. It was about 4,500-ish for Pittsburgh tonight.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the show on Tuesday felt like it was, it's an event. And I feel like I should be saying the same thing about the 5-year anniversary of AEW Dynamite. But it didn't feel as big of like a party. You know, NXT had a lot of special guests. They had like a new logo and new intro and new everything. So I would say promotionally.
Lil Wayne.
Had Lil Wayne. Yes. Yes, of course. So, it did feel like a bigger party, I suppose.
Well, we're going to get into tonight's edition of Dynamite. And you know, Wei, we have, over the last 5 years, I mean, this has been one of the most, like, scrutinized companies when it comes to, like, you know, just so many things that have been picked apart. And do you recall, like, our biggest gripe, night one of Dynamite 5 years ago, a aspect of Dynamite that I don't think gets harped on enough by people?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind Dynamite. Yes, blast off. It's time to detonate a new show on the Post Wrestling Network. I am John Pollock, along with Wei EW himself, Mr. Ting. How are you tonight?
Doing very well. Very happy to be here and very happy that every Wednesday from now on until the end of time, we will have to say the words Rewind a Dynamite. What a mouthful.
Yeah, I only judge wrestling programming names now based on how it affects us and what we have to potentially name our shows. And I'm less high on Dynamite, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly the longest title in our particular series in terms of syllables. Rewind Dynamite. That's 6 syllables.
The syllable count was just outrageous. I mean, this was a new world for us in 2019. And I don't think enough people focused on the amount of syllables that Tony Khan was introducing to professional wrestling.
Sure. Yeah. Dynamite. It's really not that bad. You know, I've gotten used to it. 5 years of saying that name, and I'm assuming 5 years of listening to our lovely, lovely Rewind Dynamite theme song.
That's so, right.
Jacob Chestnut, shout out. Thank you very much for that. It's still relevant. It still works, I would say, you know, all the lyrics.
I think so. It's held up very well.
Yeah.
Over all these years. Tonight's Dynamite anniversary show, it did feature both Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata featured as they were 7 years ago at Sakura Genesis, which is going to be our focus of Rewind Away coming up on Thursday. So we want to let everybody know that Wei and I will be on the Post Wrestling Cafe Thursday chatting about Sakura Genesis. This was at a huge, huge peak for New Japan, at least of this era, and headlined by a match that unfortunately is remembered for all the wrong reasons. And it's a stellar match. We'll talk about it. And of course, we will talk about how it had a enormous effect on the life and the career of Katsuyori Shibata coming out of that at a sold-out show in Sumo Hall. So that's coming out on Thursday. And we just wrapped up our 6-part series on the Mr. McMahon Netflix documentary, where we dropped episode 6 in our review and thoughts earlier today. All 6 episodes can be listened to now. We have done like over 6 hours of commentary and analysis on the Mr. McMahon series. I thought these were great shows, if I do say so myself. And I thought that the last two we did, I thought they were phenomenal, if I'm going to give a word.
Yeah, I'm assuming a lot of people have either finished or are about to finish, you know, the series. Believe it or not, I think some people might not have 6 hours free throughout their, you know, one or two days to finish it. So a lot of you guys might just be finishing it now. These podcasts are out there for you in the Post Wrestling Cafe. Maybe getting a little bit of extra discussion, you know, just to kind of help you guys process your thoughts on what you saw. Maybe if you're curious about some of our criticisms and some of what we felt this documentary series managed to do well, we have 6 hours of discussion for you guys to dig into.
Because both of us put our heads together and we're like, there's a real hole in the market for analysis of the Mr. McMahon series. So maybe we can be the show that covers the Mr. McMahon series.
You said that, John. I know that might feel like that way to you, but not everybody has access or like is even looking for, you know, all these things.
Well, there's a lot of reviews out there, but I think we have a unique take.
It's a very popular show.
I know that. I know that.
Last week.
Absolutely. All right. So check all of that out.
We got the best one. Okay. That's all that matters. There are a lot of them out there. This is the best one.
Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you 30 days access. And in addition to the Sakura Genesis show this month, we're also doing Saturday night's main event from October of 1987 and Money in the Bank 2011 featuring John Cena against CM Punk at the Allstate Arena in Chicago, where NXT was on Tuesday. Plus, we're going to have reviews of King of Pro Wrestling, Royal Quest 4, and TNA's Bound for Glory this month exclusively for Cafe members. Say nothing of the ongoing MCU Later series covering Agatha All Along, Rewind to SmackDown every Friday, and of course Collision Course with John Cena and Kate from Montreal.
It's a lot of shit.
That's our tagline.
Yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
On to Dynamite we go from the Peterson Event Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And WrestleTix announcing 4,425, the last number that they had. And we open with a BCC video alerting us that war is upon us. It's time to pick sides. And they are addressing Yuta, who Pac knows is not like the rest of them. Zoo creatures. Zoo creatures. Yuta is a lion, which technically would be a zoo creature, would he not?
Depending on the zoo, but yeah, I think most of the good zoos have lions. Sure.
I think so. So stop acting like you haven't already chosen the side. And Claudio says he and Moxley are still the same guys. Doesn't know what the problem is for Yuta. This is your home. And then Shafir enters and she speaks in Romanian. And that was her contribution here before Moxley put his attention on Danielson. Stated he prayed Danielson wouldn't win the title, but here we are. There will be casualties, and you will get a gift from the universe because you get to go out on your shield and die a warrior's death on your home soil, and I will bury you in your backyard peacefully, and at WrestleDream, I will relieve you of your duty and send Daddy home for good.
Mm-hmm. In general, I think this, to start off with this like cold open with the BCC speaking, makes a lot of sense. If this was any other edition of Dynamite, for a 5-year anniversary show, I kind of expected something with a bit more fanfare, you know, something that might be a bit more retrospective, just to, again, like put the alert out there that this is a special edition of the show. It's, you know, like Tony seems to convey that through, I think, the, I don't know, quality of card, perhaps the occasional video recaps to lead into the person that's about to be interviewed on the show. But beyond that, like there's really nothing that, you know, that really kind of stood out, that really made this feel like it was that big of a monumental show. You know, I hate to maybe just bring up comparisons, but like if this was the WWE, they would use this number. It's 5, you know, it's halfway to 10. They would milk the shit out of this number to hopefully spike a bit of a rating. I think this is where I think in terms of presentation, AEW, just even for my own excitement watching the show, could learn from doing some of that and making this feel just like that much of a bigger event.
I mean, really what the show was going on was the two big matches throughout the night, I guess the most they did show highlights of, you know, past Dynamites and such. But really, I'm most curious to see if today's like TV announcement, if that, you know, it in some way enhances viewership tonight of people tuning in for this big announcement being made.
So even that, I was expecting some component on this show reflecting that announcement. I was expecting a Tony Khan appearance at some point. Huge announcement from Tony Khan, you know, like they love playing that game and they did not resort to it for what would have actually been a big announcement, even though we got it as a press release. To hear Tony actually deliver it to a live audience to just get that applause, I think would have been really great, you know, that I'm surprised they didn't capitalize on.
Yeah. And then Tony can say, I too made my own video package and here's a supercut of my favorite podcast critics over the last 5 years that I would like to play for everybody here.
Here are some of my favorite tweets over the past year.
I saved them all. Tonight is called Tony Khan's Receipts.
Yeah, Tony addresses his enemies. Yeah. What do you think of Marina Shafir now speaking in her Moldovan language, which, yes, I guess is a...
I'm assuming this was Romanian. I'm not of a Moldovan descent, but I kind of like it. It's... You know,
are we just to forget she's just forgotten English, or was this more like a stylistic choice to just sound threatening?
Don't you remember that one promo she did like 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think
that's enough that you're like, you know what? I got to just completely abandon the English language and go with something else.
Right. Got it. What was the content of that promo again?
Oh, I just remember it. Wasn't it with Nyla Rose?
Yeah, it was something. It was one of those things that, like, it wasn't even on Dynamite.
It was on Rampage, maybe. Or it was a dark. So we're going years back at this point. So.
Like, yeah, she's wearing a hat, and there's been enough written about it. Like, I'm reading the Wrestle Crap entry on it right now.
Oh,
and,
boy.
Well, yeah, that might be enough to.
This was the return of the Supernova from Moldova.
Yes. Yes. All right. Cool. I think they're doing a great job with her. You know what? If they want to make her stand out by having her speak another language, cool. Let's see how it turns out.
I was hoping Jon Moxley was going to mimic her and also address Danielson in another language, but no, he did this in English. The announcers are Excalibur, Tony Schiavone, and Nigel McGuinness, who is filling in for Taz, who was a victim of the dreaded parking lot attack. More on that tonight. But they are starting off with Will Ospreay and Ricochet for the AEW International title. And Ospreay is shown in the back speaking with Kyle Fletcher when Don Callis and Konosuke Takeshita appear, and they didn't get to talk to Ospreay about what happened last week. But Callis has to run to the airport, and he leaves with Kyle Fletcher, and Takeshita remains in the back. So they come out, the bell rings, and already the place is cheering. They give the backstory. Ospreay is 5-4 in their past one-on-one matches, but they have not had a singles match since 2017. And then Tony Schiavone mentions the WBD renewal. And we did get plenty of mentions of this from Excalibur throughout the night. But we get into a series of acrobatic sequences with each one countering the other, having the answer for each one, and then ending it with handsprings and coming off the ropes with the double backflips and staring at one another as the crowd goes wild. And they just got into this rhythm. Ospreay balances on the guardrail on the floor, and Ricochet leaps up onto the guardrail for a Hurricane Rana off the guardrail. And they continue here, some spectacular stuff here, including a super Rana that Ospreay manages to land on his feet from. So the crowd, of course, goes wild for that. Ricochet hits his own version of the Os Cutter, and then the Hidden Blade gets captured. And after a backslide bomb, follows with a pile driver to Ospreay. Ospreay comes at Ricochet for the Hidden Blade, but gets caught. Then Ospreay lands the Styles Clash and follows with an Os Cutter, only gets a two count. So Ricochet ducks, hits his own Hidden Blade, and then goes for the top for the Shooting Star Press. Ospreay kicks out, and we got a shout out to one of the pioneers of the female division in this company with a Ruby Soho reaction here from Ricochet. The Vertigo gets blocked. Each goes for Poison Rana's. Osprey on the last one manages the Hidden Blade and lands on top of Ricochet. Both men's shoulders are down, so Rick Knox does what any referee in this situation would do. He counts three for both men, and the bell rings. And man, this crowd, you gotta give Pittsburgh credit for this. They loved this finish. Like, they all got to their feet. There was like a six-minute standing ovation for this end. It was awesome. They were like, what the f-? And they announce it's a draw, but then Ricochet and Will start just making these very animated run it back signals. So Justin Roberts is like, okay, according to Tony Khan, the match can restart. So it's like, you've taken this match away, but then you've given it back, and the fans are back into this, and they start trading strikes, and the Hidden Blade gets hit, and Konosuke Takeshita runs in for the DQ. And now this crowd knows, they're like, oh, they're not giving it back to us a second time. He takes out Ricochet and Ospreay using the power drive knee and the raging fire. He's also out by himself. There's no Kyle Fletcher, no Don Callis. And then Takeshita grabs the international title and stands above both fallen men to conclude what took up the first half hour of the show.
Mm-hmm. So match was, I think, great. For me,
on its way to being something very special.
Yes, yes. It didn't get to that level. No. Like, and for me, I'm so like maybe just kind of careful with my words, because like, this was a great match, and I don't want to like take that away. But I had such high expectations for this one. You know, like, this is the one match that I think like over the years we've kind of really built up in our minds, and Will Ospreay has had excellent matches over this 2 month period. I wouldn't put this in the top three, you know, like, he's had better matches with Pac, but that last week, that tag team match was outstanding. MJF at All In. This didn't crack that, and maybe it was on its way, but it didn't even really give us like even a glimpse of, you know, like an amazing near fall, for instance, or just an elevated state of, you know, audience reaction before they took it away. Now, the first time they took it away, the double pin, yeah, okay, a little bit like fine for a false finish, you know, like, to just, you know, gets the crowd back up in a frenzy. And then they only do that to take it away with an even shittier finish with Takeshita ruining it.
Oh, wait, you thought that was bad?
Yeah. So that just ultimately, I think, you know, I understand the point is to like put heat on Takeshita so that you could do Takeshita Osprey. But I think, especially with AEW, you never want to leave audiences with a bit of a disappointed taste in their mouth. And ultimately, that's unfortunately what I came away with from this match, as good as it was.
Yeah. First of all, the positives, I thought Ricochet was like really looking good in this match. Like, to me, this was the most, like, he had a very good match with Beast Mortos. But this was, you know, really feeling like he was out of his whatever it was, like, just coming into AEW and an opponent that he could go all out with. And again, I thought they were on their way to having that. So, I mean, for 90% of this, I mean, it's building, but you have this angle at the end that you're building to something later. And, you know, the argument is going to be, well, they're building to something bigger and you can't give this away here and there. Thing is, AEW, like, delivering these big matches is kind of what you have staked your reputation on. And that's something that I don't know how many times, like, it's a balancing act. Like, there's times that a match is designed to build something, and there's a time you just have them go out there and satisfy that audience, because there's going to be future ones when you're going to want to play from this card to put two amazing talents together, and you do want your audience to know that this is going to be worth my while. And I'm being probably too harping on this, because this was really spectacular for, I would say, 15 to 16 minutes. And the finish was what really took people out of it.
We can say, like, this type of booking is a part of the Tony Khan playbook over the past 5 years. Like, he will give you the big match that you thought was going to have its first iteration on pay-per-view. He will give it to you on TV just to deliver some form of, like, draw, you know, whether it be a time limit draw or some form of inconclusive finish. And oftentimes, like, the time limit draws are executed so well that you have enough respect, and that gets you a lot more hyped up for the rematch, even yep. though you've seen it for like 60 minutes, like we saw with MJF and Ospreay. This wasn't necessarily one of those. Like, I just didn't think creatively it was.
These, I don't care what market you're in. Like, anytime they do these DQs, like, these AEW, they hate these DQs. And it's not like it's like the right type of heat. It's just it feels like, oh, we were screwed. Not so much right. the babyface was screwed.
I also do kind of feel like this match needed to, like, you know, get to that higher register before you cut it off. And it didn't do that for me. And I wonder if part of that is because this style of match, like, what they're trying to, like, you know, replicate portions of, like, what they were doing with, like, the superhuman poses, but, like, this style of match has been sort of, like, delivered so often now over the past several years that these two have, you know, not had a match together, that it doesn't feel as special anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it should feel special just given the rivalry and the history, but when we're just talking about the style of wrestling, it's been done so much, especially, like, just even in AEW, even within Will Ospreay's own matches, that it's not jumping out maybe as much as, like, the rest of the Super Juniors did at the time, of course.
And taking from the finish, it certainly does feel like we're going to be getting a three-way between these two, which does sound like another match that the expectation level is going to be through the roof.
Yeah, I say everything I said, but then you present, like, the prospect of that match, and I'm immediately excited to see it again. So, you know what? Forget what I just said.
Then we had Renee with Mercedes Moné and Camille, and Renee must have done, like, 50 interviews on tonight's show. They have Mercedes, who has put together a video of Dynamite's best moments. So, of course, it's all highlights of her. And we come back and MVP walks in, handing his card over to Mercedes. And that was the extent of Mercedes on the show. No angles shot with Mercedes beyond this being the latest person that MVP is trying to recruit.
Right. Yeah. It seems like it's a slow build to whatever she's, you know, got coming up with. MVP doesn't seem like she's got plans for Wrestle Dream at the moment, unless they build something incredibly fast. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to, like, you know, pace ourselves with the Mercedes Moné, like, focus, you know, her being away and then occasionally being ramped up for, like, a big program ultimately helps make her feel that much more special, in my opinion. The tease of the MVP relationship is awesome. I think it's exactly the type of voice that Mercedes Moné needs. And I think it's exactly the type of person that MVP needs to speak for. You know, somebody who is not that great at promos, let's be honest, but, like, feels so, like, larger than life in so many other ways. And it just requires somebody like an MVP to translate that. So I very much look forward to what they could accomplish together for Camille as well.
They showed highlights of Jericho and Ishii's match from 2 years ago and the Guns beating the Acclaimed for the tag titles in February of last year.
Yeah, again, like, who cares about these moments? Like, if you're trying to pluck from the history of AEW's 5 years, they're meaningless. They're only there because they wanted to lead to the Guns being interviewed. And like, if that's the most you could do to celebrate your 5 years, I think that's a bit of a missed opportunity.
Well, Renee interviewed the Guns, and they're asked about Juice and Hangman tonight. So Hangman attacks him with a chair, and that was our contribution of the Guns on tonight's show. Big Bill introduces Jericho and Brian Keith for the TV time segment. And Jericho brags about the TV deal and states, "We made a lot of experts look like idiots." And not only is it the anniversary of Dynamite, it's his 34th anniversary of his pro wrestling debut in 1990. And he calls this Philadelphia before correcting himself. And he didn't think he was as focused on winning titles as he was nurturing the branches. But after headlining Arena Mexico and then beating Mark Briscoe, it's time for a new era of Jericho. The Ocho is out in favor of Nueve.
Yeah, you've had to work on many languages. Oh,
dude,
today,
I had to listen to this properly. And he challenges Mark Briscoe for Wrestle Dream. So Briscoe comes out with the conglomeration, and Briscoe explains how real men don't make excuses, and then he goes on to list a lot of excuses for why he lost to Jericho last week, but says he's not going to do that. It was a tornado match. So he then puts over Jericho being influential and one of the finest wrestlers on the planet, but I'm going to put your legendary head on my wall and beat you. So Jericho says, "You can't beat me. Maybe your brother Jay could." And the whole crowd, they like react negatively to this and says, "Mark, you were never as good as Jay was." So Mark strikes him and warns him about bringing up Jay's name, and he's going to whip his ass at WrestleDream.
Mm-hmm. A good heel line from Jericho about Jay, and it served its purpose in creating a very fired up response from Mark. I think Mark Briscoe has turned into somebody who right now feels like a great lead babyface promo, and showed here that he's not just occasionally the funny eccentric guy that you hear like go and do these rambling types of promos. He can get really serious too. So I'm happy to see him get this push, and some people are going to criticize being in the Jericho verse as any sort of push, but I do think it's like it's advancing his spot. He's getting a singles match defending his ROH championship on a pay-per-view. So yeah. Just to clarify, John, you're going, you took your video off, right?
I have been disconnected. So I'm working on this here. I will.
Oh, okay. No worries. Oh, there you go. Okay.
Jesus Christ.
We're back.
Yeah. Yeah. My ongoing battle with my laptop is I'm losing this battle. Okay. That's all I can give you an update on.
No, that's no problem.
Okay. So after this segment, we go to a junkyard with Darby Allin. And he shared a story of being on a bus when he was younger with three guys who were spitting at him from behind. And he's just sitting there taking it. But then he finally gets up and walks into this guy's face. And the guy has a switchblade, but it wasn't Jay White. And he says, "What are you going to do about it?" And Darby said, "I guess I'm going to get stabbed." But he said he felt good for standing up and doing something about it. And that's how he felt when he stood up to John Moxley a few weeks ago. "But people are starting to lose faith in me after I said I'd become the face of AEW. So he's issuing an open challenge for WrestleDream in Tacoma." This is quite the story.
Quite the story that I don't doubt for a second is
based in
reality.
This is a guy that just needs to stay away from buses altogether. They do not yield good news for Darby Allin.
If it's not a bus, I mean, I don't know if like a train would he do any better at. I think trouble just seems to find this guy no matter where he is. I thought it was a really strong promo from Darby, one that like, you know, we were all wondering why Darby would like put up this like title shot against John Moxley. I guess we could just like, I don't know, chalk it up down to like standing up to a bully and that's about it. But like we actually got the effects of his he's selling the effects of losing that WrestleDream main event match. And he did it in his own way where like it wasn't kind of so obvious, but it was just like you can clearly tell this guy is disappointed and you know, not taking it that well. And he told it to us through this very compelling story about why he doesn't regret the decision to, you know, stand up to John Moxley. Now, be willing to get stabbed makes for a great wrestling character, but it's a terrible lesson to teach kids when they're being threatened by somebody with a knife. So I hope that's not what most people took away from listening to this story. If somebody pulls a knife on you and you're involved in an argument, get out of there, okay? Just run. Unless you got a knife yourself and you're very maybe confident in your own knifing skills, you should probably just leave, okay? Even if you have the best knifing skills in the world, please do not engage. It won't turn out well for anybody. But if you're going to be a pro wrestler, these are great stories to tell.
Yeah, I'm just imagining like the 10-year-old that is hearing this story and has just gotten over being grounded after seeing the syringe at the last pay-per-view and trying to incorporate that with their friend.
That's the
Johnny, what if we told you?
It's the 5th anniversary. I'll sit down to watch AEW Dynamite with my son.
No plastic.
We'll get stabbed.
Yeah, Vince McMahon had his list of what WWE never does. But unfortunately, AEW, plastic bags, check. Switchblades, check. Fire, syringes. It's all fair game. Title Tuesday, they announced 9 p.m. next week on TBS. So not going directly head-to-head for the full 2 hours. But there will be an hour of crossover between the two. And I don't know, like, you tell me, Wei. I watched this show and it felt to me like they realized, okay, we have all these shows that we have had to promote. Our focus needs to be the pay-per-view and not winning this random Tuesday night battle. Like, there was a time when I think at the end of the show, we would have just gotten a loaded up lineup that was thrown together. It just feels like, okay, it's one show next Tuesday. They're probably like NXT did a really great number on Tuesday. They're going to do a great number next week. And it just felt like we're not even necessarily taking part in this pissing contest. Now, granted, we still have a week and we will get social media announcements. I don't think they're throwing the towel in, but they used tonight's 2 hours, 2.5 hours to promote Wrestle Dream. That felt like the focus.
Wouldn't you say like the fact that they're doing 9 to 11 instead of 8 to 10, like, isn't that indicative of like them not necessarily wanting to fully engage in this, you know, what you're deeming as a pissing contest?
I mean, I just saw this for the first time during the show, so I don't know if it was like a scheduling issue with TBS. I don't know if they're it will help AEW to have an hour unopposed, and it's going to help the NXT number too. Like, it's going to help both sides to have an hour unopposed for both of them.
Okay, so just estimates right now, who do you think, quote unquote, wins the night?
I think that I think NXT will definitely have the higher audience and the higher demo number.
I think so too. With the combination of, what are we even comparing here? Because one is network and the other is cable. So it's not even a fair comparison.
It's not the same number of homes that they are in.
So it could just be that. But, you know, the perception will be on Wednesday, this number is bigger than this number. Therefore, suck it, AEW fans. You know, like, that's why would they want to invite that sort of, you know, discourse. It's going to happen anyway, but why invite it?
Hangman Page against Juice Robinson. They met on the ramp before the bell, and Juice has a strap, so both men take turns, and they fight through the crowd. There's popcorn and beer being used, and we get more information about the Taz attack in the parking lot. He has been sent back to New York, and his knee is in, quote, bad shape. The crowd is chanting, "Whose house?" at Hangman, so he gives them the middle fingers, and we get into the ring, and I think this was all during picture-in-picture, but there was a portion where they bring up Nigel saying thank you to Bryan Danielson last week. And I was just like, I didn't say thank you to Bryan Danielson. I said that to Tony Khan and to pro wrestling, not to Danielson. And for the rest of the night, Shivani just broke his balls about this. And there was one, I'm pretty sure it was in picture-in-picture, and Tony's like, thank you, and Nigel's warning him that he's about to get up and attack Tony. But I mean, Tony Schiavone was just breaking his balls. It was,
I wonder if Max viewers will get uninterrupted commercial breaks.
I think, yeah, I would think that's a very likely I think that would encourage a lot of people to want to get the Max version if you have access to both. Like, I find watching on Fight, where I don't have to deal with picture in picture, I just get the full matches complete, I think it's a way better way to watch.
I worry it will make the commentators a lot more self-conscious, and I don't think we might not get the same, you know, thriller versions of them.
I agree, but it's also jarring because it's not just like a little bit. They go into a different universe during these commercial breaks that a lot of viewers can't still hear, but not in their minds. So this match, it really did struggle with heat. I mean, they were working very physical. It picked up at the end here. There's a left hand of God by Juice, but then Page drops him onto the edge of the apron, and Juice fires off a cannonball, sending him through the guardrail. And then after a fallaway slam into the corner, Page goes for the deadeye off the turnbuckle. It's countered into a powerbomb, and Page avoids the Juices loose when Page grabs referee Aubrey Edwards, allowing him to low blow Juice and hit a buckshot to win in 10 minutes and 8 seconds. Page then removes his belt and starts choking Juice when Jay White makes his return, attacking Hangman, gets a very big pop, and man was not going without a tan in advance of this return, and ends up spearing Page in the crowd through the table that they had set up 10 minutes prior, and then goes to check on Juice Robinson.
Mm-hmm. The match, I thought, was all right. This was where, I definitely think the atmosphere might have, like, decreased what might have otherwise come across as, like, a more exciting match. In effect, it just felt like a bit of an all right match to me. Not that much to say about it, even. All to set up, though, the Jay White return. And I totally even forgot that it was Paige that took Jay White out. It's been so long. But this makes sense. It's a program for Jay White to, you know, play a strong babyface in against arguably coming off of the last pay-per-view, like the strongest heel that they had. I do also feel that like this might be a step down for Paige in some ways, because I thought coming off the Swerve feud, like Paige is ready for a world title level type of program, but the world title scene is very, very busy right now with Danielson and Moxley. So now is this the next best thing for Paige to, in order to advance him to, so that, you know, maybe in due time you can put Paige for in a title challenge situation? Not sure. Let's see. I think Jay White has more to gain from this program than Paige does, though.
I'm looking forward to this. I think that I think this is a good opponent for Jay White to come back to, and I think it's a great opponent for Hangman Page as well.
Apparently, Jay White. So RM is saying Jay White cut a fantastic promo that's on YouTube right now, and yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because first promos coming back from a long layoff are always full of fire and passion. So let's see.
Maybe the enhanced social elements will be some of these great digital pieces they have will make it onto television, because I think that would be they do some incredible work that people just don't see in the same volume, or it just doesn't have the same weight as
you're seeing, like, at most, I don't know, a 15-second clip.
Yeah, like the highest bar being Jeff Jarrett, like that promo resurrected his career. Going into the Owen Hart Cup. There's Renee outside the arena when Jack Perry pulls up on his bus. We never really understood why he was showing up for tonight's show, but he's arrived fashionably late. And in walks Katsuyori Shibata, who issues a challenge via Siri. And Perry says he's going to think about it. And then Perry walks off screen, returns to attack Shibata, and lays him out, driving his head into the bus, and accepts the match. Mm-hmm. For Wrestle Dream.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah. Katsuyori Shibata is, everybody's talking about him this week, you know, following his upcoming appearance on Rewind Away, or anticipation of, I should say. So, yeah, getting a pay-per-view spot. What do you think of the match?
It's a, it's a weird pairing to go to.
What? How so?
I just, it's...
What's weird about this? Come on.
Everything. It should be a good match.
In 20s, when did that match take place against Okada? 2016?
17.
In 2017, could you have seen Katsuyori Shibata coming back from that injury to face Luke Perry's son?
I probably would have predicted that exact scenario in 2017 before anyone was aware of who Jack Perry was. Yeah, I think I would have assumed that. I probably would have picked Ian Ziering actually as the opponent, but I would have been close. Some more highlights from the past. Moxley and Omega's brawl on the first episode with the paradigm shift through the glass table, and then Danielson and Hangman going the time limit in December 2021. And we go to Danielson, who has had one sentence going through his head all day. Fuck John Moxley. And he says that this title is not his. It's not Moxley. It's AEW's. And this is where the best wrestle. He's 1-1 with Okada. Okada broke my arm and my orbital bone, but never broke my spirit. And tonight we determine who is the best, because my title and my career are on the line. And God damn it, there was already someone here in Pittsburgh that tried to end my career. I'm not going to end my career a second time in this city.
This was where he, what do you mean?
Well, this is where Joseph Maroon is based out of, and he was ineligible.
Okay. Oh, man. That's good.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, beginning with New Japan's Sakura Genesis from April of 2017 and the highly controversial match between Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata. Later this month, we'll go back to October of 1987 with WWF's Saturday Night's main event on NBC, including title matches between Hulk Hogan and Sika, Honky Tonk Man against Randy Savage, and the Hart Foundation facing the Young Stallions. The month rounds out with WWE's Money in the Bank 2011. 7, with CM Punk challenging John Cena for the WWE Championship in Chicago after the pipe bomb promo. Plus, Karen Peterson presents a special show focusing on the Queen of Villains on Netflix, weekly editions of Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course, ad-free shows, news and audio updates sent directly to your email, and so much more beginning at $6 per month, which provides instant 30-day access and extensive archives going back to 2017. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
Britt Baker against Serena Deeb is next. Baker had this great entrance. This is probably the best piece of like production on the show. She comes out, and they kind of gave her the Moxley entrance, where she comes out through the crowd instead of on the ramp with one of the terrible towels. And, of course, the crowd like picked its moments. Like they were not very lively for a lot of this show, but, of course, for Baker's entrance they were going to be, and for Danielson and Okada, that was a big deal. And Ricochet and Ospreay, but Baker comes out, and they showed a highlight of her lights out match with Thunder Rosa from the St. Patrick's Day Slam 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was cool.
And then Serena Deeb just walked out to her regular.
Well, she had her own flag too. Okay,
that's true. Deeb's dojo was represented as well.
Yeah.
So Deeb is escaping the lockjaw immediately, and we see Mariah May in the crowd, and they would cut to her. Sporadically, Deeb works on the knee. She's applying a single leg crab and continues to work on this through the picture in picture. Gets a stretch muffler applied while clasping the hands, and then Baker cradles her for a counter, and the Deeb talks gets turned into an air raid crash. Baker hits another air raid crash, this time off the turnbuckle, and finally gets the lockjaw at 11 minutes and 37 seconds. Mariah May was not impressed by the match, and you were led to be looking at Mariah May and Britt Baker at a future date.
Future date, yeah. Which should be a good program in theory, you know? Like, you're talking about Mariah May, who, like, is still coming off of one of the hottest programs of the year with the Toni Storm program. And Britt Baker is one of the biggest stars, maybe the biggest star that they have in the women's division, maybe outside of Mercedes. So it's a chance for us to see what May can do with a big-named opponent. And I think Britt Baker herself has a lot of doubters that she might be looking to silence coming off of the disappointing Monet match at All In. So, what do you think about this match?
It was good. Again, like, even with Britt Baker, like, it's not like the heat was through the roof for this, mm-hmm. as she was selling. I just think, like, the crowd brought down a lot of these matches for me. And I'm curious.
Are you blaming the crowd, or are you blaming the product?
I'd be curious for this audience, that it seemed that as soon as people saw that overrun warning from Tony Khan, I think a lot of people were assuming Danielson and Okada has the potential to go 60, but it's definitely going long. And if you're someone there in the crowd and you know you're getting that super long main event, and potentially like you're sticking around for the Rampage tapings after, it's just like, it's a long night you're looking ahead of yourself for. And that was the big match for many people.
Could be that. I just think that, like, there were certain things that had anticipation built into it for this particular show. And that's Ospreay versus Ricochet on short notice, Okada versus Danielson. Just the announcement of that was enough to get people enticed as well. But then the rest of this, it was pretty obvious, you know, who was going to win. Hangman versus Juice, as much as like Juice might be beloved, it's not exactly like, you know, an equal match for two people that are, you know, at the same level. Baker versus Deeb, even, you know, the one's a big star, the other's, you know, just a bit of a mid-carder. So could be that. Anyway, it could just be volume as well of people.
Did you get to see the Toni Storm promo at the press conference?
Oh, my God.
Stardom.
This is lovely.
This was one of Toni Storm's best performances, as Mayu Iwatani is seated there. They had their show at Corcoran Hall earlier today, where Storm, Mina Shirakawa, and Micah defeated Mayu Iwatani, Hanan, and Saya Iida in the main event. And at the press conference the day prior, Toni Storm is sitting there and goes on this like 4-minute speech about her love affair with Stan Hansen that she had for 3 months, and what Stan Hansen told her as they were in their post-coital embrace, I will put it, which ended with a lariat. I cannot recap this at all.
A lariat, but not with his arm.
No.
So that had to have been his leg, right?
One of them.
Leg lariat? Yeah. It was amazing. It was
so good.
It was just incredible. Like now, the poise of Storm to stay in this character. Like, I don't know how many performers could get this out. 3 minutes worth of material and not crack.
So reacting the way that you have to this one, how will you feel the next time she does this at a press conference? An AEW press conference?
I don't care. I really don't
care. Will you take the time to enjoy it?
I it's never a case of not enjoying it. I don't have time for them at the press conference. But it's what they do. It's like, I'm not going to say, hey, they do all these in character things. Like, that's what you're going to get with Toni Storm at these.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So afterwards, Deeb attacks Baker from behind, driving her knee into the mat, and applies the Serenity Lock when Queen Aminata comes to Baker's aid. More highlights. Joe and Hook from January. That just sets us to Hook, who is Hook, be really upset that your dad has been attacked. It's like, I got this. And Hook was at a loss for words, and he's coming to kill someone.
He was really mad that somebody attacked his dad in the parking lot. You know, sadly, no footage of this attack. So, you know, maybe.
And I'm sure Taz couldn't get a glimpse of the person.
Well, yeah.
Maybe it was a luchador. Maybe they were under a mask. I bet it was Mortos.
It could be, yeah. So we're teeing up Hook's next challenge. And you know what? I thought Hook sounded really good here, pissed off, all right? Short and sweet, good emotion, like slapped the road case behind him with force. So I don't think I want a long promo from Hook. I just want these sort of little quick short bursts of energy, and we'll see who the opponent is. Who do you think is the mystery attacker? Who done it?
Stan Hansen.
No. Okay.
With
a lariat.
There was a very clear tease, because immediately after this, we get Christian Cage addressing Pittsburgh. He's the face of TBS. Soon he will have it all. Hook, line, and sinker.
Of course. And yes, I guess attacking dads is what he just what he does. Okay. Hook versus Christian. Interesting.
They showed Kenny Omega and Danielson from the first Grand Slam, which was incredible. For me, it's maybe for some it's your favorite match. For me, just the spectacle of it and the moment and that first time at Arthur Ashe Stadium, that to me was just like a really historic show for the company. And that match was a huge deal when they, that was Danielson's first big match in AEW. Renee is with Mariah May, and she runs down Willow Nightingale. So after all this stuff with Britt Baker, she does this whole segment with Willow Nightingale and says she keeps failing up, and Willow overhears this after she's called shady and confronts her, and they do a whole pull apart.
Well, I'm assuming this is a build to next week, I have to think, for Tuttle Tuesday. I mean, you need some Tuttle matches, and this seems almost so immediate that they might just...
You don't think they'll hold this off for Battle of the Belts?
When is that?
It's in October. Like 2 weeks.
Well, it's possible. You're right, John. They could. They have like... when they put
Could they have announced this if this is happening next week?
You will find out... on Twitter, all right? Like, you find out everything else. It's okay, John. You know, when they announce, like...
Maybe Twitter should be signing them to a deal. That's where you get all the news.
Anyway, we have a lot of thoughts already on all that. But yeah, this seems like it's more immediate, Baker, more long-term. So, yeah.
One being next Tuesday, the other being 2 weeks at the pay-per-view.
Yes.
Short and long-term. Private Party against Iron Savages. They showed the win by Private Party over the Young Bucks on episode 2 of Dynamite. So the story is they peaked on episode 2. According to Jon Moxley, they've done nothing since episode 2. And now we're just going to pick up where episode 2 left off, as if this were the next week.
Yeah, yeah. They've been sort of frozen for 5 years. And I guess that's not that far from the truth, because like Mark Quinn has probably missed what, like 3 of those 5 years, it seems. It feels like due to injury. One of them has been injured for a better part of those 5 years.
Well, Quinn is coming off a pec injury, and Zay has his hand all wrapped up and his shoulder as well. This was a short match, a minute 5 with the Iron Savages. Boulder got sent to the floor. Quinn hit a dive, and then They struggled to hit the gin and juice onto Bronson, but did get it and got the win. More so, this was for the post-match, as Zay addresses the crowd, says, "At the beginning of the year, we said, new year, new champs, and we meant it." It's like, dude, it's October. "And they don't care about current and past injuries, but we will be the next tag team champions. We beat the Young Bucks once, and we'll do it again." And Brother Zay is then thinking, you know what? I'm feeling froggy. I'm feeling froggy. And I'm going to jump. Suck my ass. Let's do this right here and right now. I was only envisioning this being the exact dialogue Darby Allin used on those three bullies on the bus.
I'm just envisioning that the sound of your recap being clipped out by Brandon from New Jersey
being shared
for all time on social media.
Yeah, yeah. No one's safe, whether it's Eric Marcotte or me. So the Young Bucks appear, and they take credit for building AEW, a big part of it. And they state, you know, we do have this large overrun tonight, so we do have the time to do this match, and they're teasing it. So should we do it tonight? And the crowd's semi-cheering. I think they could take it or leave it, to be quite honest. But then they reveal, we have super limited dates, and we're not wasting one on a town like Pittsburgh. I was like, so their contracts are very interesting. They appearances don't count as dates. It's matches.
Yeah, maybe Monet's on a similar type of schedule.
Okay. So then Jack Perry shows up to attack Private Party. The Bucks join in. Shibata runs down. The heels exit. And Christopher Daniels comes out and states that we will make a six-man tag for Rampage. So this live crowd is going to get this match. And all I was trying to do was figure out, like, the time continuum. Like, is Rampage a show we all, in story, it's taped in the same building that night? Because that would kind of render this whole one date thing meaningless.
I don't think so. I think we're supposed to think of Rampage.
In story, they're coming back to this building in two more nights.
Yeah, as they do every week, John, for Rampage.
So aren't the Bucks, they are still using up a date, but now they've got to travel an extra day to come back here.
Well, listen, that's the booking idea of Tony Khan and Christopher Daniels. You have to take that up with them.
Okay, I was very confused by how we got here, but we're getting a six-man tag on Rampage, which is a more high-profile match than usual on Rampage.
Enjoy these while they're around. We might not have Rampagers anymore.
The final countdown, right? Maybe. They showed a Swerve and Joe's
contract. Who's going to retire first, Brian Danielson or AEW Rampage?
Could Danielson retire on Rampage?
Probably not. No.
Swerve and Joe's contract, where Swerve signed it in blood, is showing, and Renee is with MVP for his announcement. But he gets interrupted by Prince Nana, who reminds us he used to be a wrestler. MVP says, "You're complaining, and I don't deal with complainers." But he does, and the camera pans behind Nana to the arrival of Shelton Benjamin, who is his business partner and, quote, president of their complaint department. And Shelton takes a sip of the man's coffee, acknowledges it is good coffee, and stole the mug. And, this is the Shelton Benjamin era upon us. He drinks coffee.
As you would expect the president of the complaint department to do, right? I think Shelton should just be lucky that he's not being replaced by AI. Like, it feels like every complaint department is, you know, being replaced by these days. Try to get an answer out of like a bot. You know, it's impossible. So Shelton is in. The pieces are falling into place for MVP stable. Lashley, probably the final piece, but it looks like Monet might be a part of this entire thing as well. So I think it's a great looking stable here, whatever they choose to call it.
There was a brief video featuring Brody Lee, which was nice that they included this. And then they showed the Ospreay MJF 59-59 match from July. And then it's time for the main event with Danielson and Okada. So the stipulation is Okada, his title is only on the line for the first 20 minutes. And Danielson, his title is on the line for the entirety of the match, as is his career.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't think there was anyone in Pittsburgh thinking, you know what, we're about to see history, as Danielson calls it, a career during
probably
the overrun.
No, probably not.
Early on, Okada is just riding out the clock, which was, you know, played to the strategy here. Danielson is doing jumping jacks, trying to get that yes chant going. And Okada lands a flapjack and just gives a smile, mocking the crowd, doing his own pointing with the yes signal. And Danielson misses a headbutt off the top, as Vince McMahon would identify it. He hit the complete work. Complete work. Sure. Drop kicks Danielson off the turnbuckle to the floor, and then Danielson is booted over the rail, and you've got all these fans chanting for Okada. So Danielson comes back with his own Irish whip into the rail, lands a suicide dive. They're trading slaps, and Nigel is giddy at the idea Danielson might be injured after this elbow off the top. And with a minute left in the 20-minute portion of the match, Danielson gets the lapel lock, but then ties up both the arms. Okada gets to the rope, lands the Busaiku knee, but Okada rolls to the floor, and the crowd is sad that Danielson is not going to win his second title. So the match continues with only Danielson's title on the line. Okada is on the floor, and a springboard somersault is executed by Danielson. Then we have stomps to the head of Okada. The yes chant begins. And then after Okada sidesteps, lands the Rainmaker, but he can't capitalize for the cover. And Danielson lands on his feet from a German, hits the Busaiku. Okada responds, hitting his own Busaiku knee. So Danielson then connects with the Rainmaker. And then Okada hits a nasty looking landslide onto the neck of Danielson. Short arm clothesline connects. And then the whole crowd notices Claudio and Pac appearing in the crowd. And they do note that since it's no longer a collision or a continental title match, people can be at ringside for this.
Yeah. I mean,
there were a lot of details to
they've
to
never
this.
Quite explained, like, is there like a sort of like heightened punishment for interrupting a continental title match as opposed to, I guess, no punishment for interrupting other matches?
It is one of those weird inconsistencies that it's like, why you can interfere to your heart's delight, as we saw in the international title match in this main event, but the sacred continental championship will never be defamed with run-ins.
So I suppose it's not so much interference is allowed. Interference is never allowed, but you can have seconds. You can have people ringside for matches that aren't the continental matches.
Correct. Yes.
So that's okay. Fine.
So they appear, and then so the idea here is that Okada gets distracted and Danielson ducks a Rainmaker and just catches Okada with a simple backslide for the win to retain his title. And the match goes 31 minutes and 39 seconds. And first of all, how did you feel just about the match itself?
So I thought it was a technically good match. It bored me for a good chunk of it, and maybe I still have this aversion to like these sort of like slow-paced Okada matches, even though strategically, I think in terms of story, it made perfect sense for Okada to take things easy, as the commentators are trying to convey. He wants to run the clock on the 20 minutes so that his title isn't up for grabs. Makes perfect sense. It just didn't really compel me, especially like this deep into the show. I also feel like it was not a worthy reason to give Okada his first singles loss, his first pinfall loss. I thought that should have been saved for somebody bigger, like at the end of the Continental Classic against Konosuke Takeshita, for instance, to just kind of give it away like this for a match that was promoted on 2 days' notice is, I don't know, calls to question a lot of decisions that went into the making of this match. So
it also didn't, like, I'd also be more forgiving if, like, at the end of this, like, you know what Danielson has lined up. He's got all this stuff. And Okada, like, this loss did not set anything up for Okada either. Like, I don't think you're going to see another Danielson match. And
no, he was just putting, well, you could. It's possible they'll do a fourth.
Well, not at the pay-per-view. Like, you need to build something up immediately for Okada on that show.
You might not have Okada on the show, on the pay-per-view. Not everybody has to have a match on the pay-per-view.
Well, the point being, like, to me, when you beat your champion, it should be for some purpose. And maybe the purpose is just simply, hey, we wanted to end the, this is our only chance to do the rubber match. And that was that.
I'm guessing it's that. Like, we don't exactly know the extent of like what Danielson's post quote unquote retirement schedule is and how far we might be from the next actual Okada match, that maybe they felt a rush and pressure to do it now. Or it could just simply be Tony feeling like, hey, it's the 5th anniversary show, God, Ospreay versus Ricochet, I need something else that's also really big. And he landed on Okada as that person. I just kind of felt it was a bit disappointing that we didn't have more promotion for this, and also the fact that Okada had suffered his first loss in this way.
I would say that the it's funny because I thought like the 20 minute thing, I wasn't that negative on it. I saw a lot of like complaints about it. I kind of like the idea that it's interesting that, you know, Danielson is kind of wrestling for this one objective and Okada's wrestling for another. They're almost like they have these two completely different strategies to winning the other's title. And you could make that final 5 minutes really impactful. And they kind of got there at the end, but I found it got more intense and intriguing after the 20 minutes rather than in the lead up to
that's
the 20.
That's just the Okada pace though, John, you know, like first, like it's his style where like we're dragging these things to, you know, like back in New Japan, 30 plus minute main events. And at least there was a storyline reason for him to drag the matches out. But that was his main event style. It's deliberately slow paced. And for some people that really works. I'm sure if I study the subtleties, there's probably a lot more thought in it than I'm giving it credit for. But just from my viewing of it now, I was bored for a good chunk of it.
I enjoyed the match. I don't think anyone's going to put this at the level of the first two matches that they had, which were, you know, just high caliber matches that we saw at Forbidden Door last year and Wrestle Kingdom this year. But I did enjoy this quite a bit, but I can see the same thing about, you know, the Okada loss at the end, how necessary that was. And you don't really have any opponent for Okada coming out of this that this built toward. Instead, we have Okada landing a Rainmaker to Danielson after the match and essentially blaming Claudio and Pac for getting caught. So Claudio and Pac enter the ring with Moxley, and Moxley explains that this has nothing to do with him. This is not his doing. And if it was, then I would have already put you out of your misery. And they're kind of hinting like there's some greater force behind this that Moxley is involved with. And Yuta runs out with a hammer. And he meets Moxley in the middle, and Moxley is, he played Darby Allin here. He's like, I guess I'm going to get hammered today.
He
stood up to the guy and said, okay, I guess you're going to hit me with your weapon.
Well, Moxley's got like four other people ringside. Three. Well,
they weren't stopping him. Moxley dares him to use it, but then Danielson tackles Moxley, and Danielson and Yuta clear out the ring, and Yuta is sick of them treating him like a child. He can fight his own fights, and he issues a challenge for next Tuesday with Danielson and Yuta against Claudio and Pac. And that was the only announcement we got for Title Tuesday next week. I'm sure there will be more to come, but that was the only match going off the air that we had.
And not a title match, this one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a guy. Well, we have all four of them hold titles. They're just not defending any of them in this match.
True, right, yeah. So, yeah, no, they're continuing to put the focus on Yuta pretty well, in my opinion. Did you get the sense they're still teasing whether or not he would turn?
Oh, I think everyone was designed to have that. It was like the old like Russo turn where he's holding the hammer and Danielson's getting up in the corner. I think they were totally making you think that.
Is that still in play, or do you think the end of this segment solve that?
I mean, they did go out of their way to explain they never saw Claudio swinging at Yuta, like he didn't want to strike him. I think like there's still that avenue that you could go with Yuta,
right?
If okay. They wanted to. There you go. That was Dynamite. I would say on paper, I looked at this like these are two of the highest quality matches you could book on any pro wrestling television show. Period. And I did enjoy them, but I thought, number one, I thought the crowd heat was not great on this show. I think you got a really sour finish to Ricochet and Ospreay that was kind of just, I don't know if we needed the double either. Like, I feel that, like, that was just like, we teased taking it away from you, but we are going to give you, and then we took it away from you again. And I think that just, that took what was a really great building match, and I think the finish can sometimes overpower your opinion. And then throughout the night, man, I'm not dying for three-hour wrestling programs, period, and 2.5 as well on this show. It's like, at the end of this, I wasn't clamoring for 2.5-hour Dynamites or 3-hour Dynamites. I really like 2-hour shows. That's my conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of the same. I thought it was a good show that I expected to be like a great show. And
I thought the build for Wrestle Dream, like they built a fair amount of stuff for Wrestle Dream, which they had to, because we've only got another week and a half before that show. And I did, to the other point, I'm glad that they didn't feel like, let's just throw out everything for Tuesday at the expense of the pay-per-view. It's like, we've got the pay-per-view is more important for us to sell than winning this Tuesday night, this Tuesday night thing that is the less priority. Like, they spent tonight. We've got X amount of time. We need to push our pay-per-view like the hardest.
Mm-hmm. By the way, just on that note, thank you, chat room, for informing me that Osprey, Ricochet, Takeshita is official for WrestleDream. So they just added that. That is for the AEW International Championship. Should be awesome. Also, a note, Sammy Guevara on the ROH tapings before Dynamite was knocked out and stretchered out. So,
well, hopefully we'll get an update there. That's unfortunate. All right. Well, there you go. Those were our thoughts. We'll take super chats, and we're also going to go to the forum at forum.postwrestling.com to get some feedback to tonight's show.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com first.
Okay, we start off with Matthew. Overall, I thought it was a good edition of Dynamite. Stories are still progressing. I'm looking forward to WrestleDream. Osprey and Ricochet was amazing until the finish. I didn't expect the finish, but I did not expect a DQ either, especially considering how sparingly AEW does them. I thought we would get some type of a draw. I mean, I didn't think they were going to go 60 on this match particularly. But looks like Hangman is going to be killing the Bang Bang Gang next. MVP brings a fresh appeal to this viewer, and I'm banking on Bobby Lashley being Darby's opponent at WrestleDream to answer the open challenge. The stranger parts of this episode for me was the random return of Mercedes and the Young Bucks appearance to set up a Rampage match. It's strange they are beefing up Rampage, which appears to be a lame duck show.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean they should completely give up on it. You know, it's still a showcase for their talents, a place for them to tell their stories, and more importantly, I guess, a place to tell the crowd to stay and not leave the tapings right after Dynamite ends. And then, is that it? All right. Let's go to Brian in New Jersey, who says, Dynamite celebrating its fifth birthday with a lot of good wrestling and a bit of a victory lap over the new deal being announced. Speaking on that, I've heard from at least one friend that AEW airing on Max will be easier for him to watch it. As for tonight's episode, I didn't like Ospreay versus Ricochet having not one but two lame finishes, but I enjoyed the match otherwise, and they set the table for WrestleDream. I thought Danielson and Okada made the most of that substantial overrun, and Britt Baker and Serena Deeb had a good outing. Shelton's arrival was a genuine highlight for me, and it's nice to see Jay White back too, thrown into a program with Hangman.
Muggins thoughts. Danielson and Okada's trilogy got a finish, unlike Ricochet Osprey. AEW needs to find a lane for Takeshita and quick. I dug the various highlights from past episodes throughout the night. Nice to see Shelton Benjamin find a new home, and Wheeler Yuta continues to be intriguing, and I almost bought him siding with Mox. I smell a trap on Title Tuesday. Overall, a solid milestone outing.
All right. And let's go to Curtis from the 519, who says, a great five-year anniversary show. Once again, bookended by two incredible matches. Despite the screwy finish, I was a big fan of the opening match, and I'm happy to see Takeshita getting a renewed push. It was good to see Jay White return, though I question his first feud being against Hangman. I understand that Hangman injured Jay in story, but it feels as though Hangman shouldn't be losing right now, and Jay should be winning his first feud back. Lashley has to be debuting versus Darby at WrestleDream, which will nicely set up a swerve return and a rivalry between those two. It was nice to see Okada with his working boots on tonight. I thought him and Brian had an excellent main event match, probably Okada's best since joining AEW full-time. Question, with no announcement of Rampage being part of the TV deal and rumors of a new AEW show on Fox, how would you make this show a bigger deal than Rampage? Or do you see it inevitably turning into Rampage 2.0 with throwaway matches on it each week as a way to get some talent on TV who are not being used elsewhere?
If they get on Fox, it can't be a throwaway show. How you do that, like at that point, you're looking at minimum like 6 hours of wrestling programming you're putting out every week. And it's like you get on Fox, like that needs to be the A show of everything. But you still have, you know, this whole deal that you have to satisfy as well. Like, it's not a easy answer of what you make that show, but it can't be throwaway when you're talking about something at that level and what your broadcaster is going to be expecting numbers wise.
But so all we have to go by right now is what Swerve said in that vlog that he didn't know he was being recorded on, right?
Yeah, like, again, this is there's nothing like finalized. It's like we know that there's been negotiations with Fox, and that's all we have to go on. Like, there's no deal.
yeah. as far as like the idea that Fox is going to be taking SmackDown's place, which is somewhat paraphrasing what Swerve was trying to say, I think, to that guy when he didn't know he was being recorded.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's like you're going off of like, is that
nothing?
Yeah. Really. Like
not
you just,
much. Yeah. So yeah, like if AEW gets Friday nights 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., then yes, that'll be the A show.
Given their sports that they have on Friday nights for a host of reasons. I would not put it on Friday nights.
I personally wouldn't expect it. I don't know. I wonder if it would get any sort of primetime spot on Fox Network proper. More likely, I think it'd be something like an FS1. And if it was FS1, would that entail a first run, you know, a show? Not necessarily.
It depends the value of the deal. Like what is Fox spending for 2 hours of AEW programming or 1 hour, whatever it turns out to be.
Yeah. The name Shockwave, Bruce Lord sent out a really nice tweet where he suggested that the name Shockwave might be in reference to what happens after a Dynamite and after a Collision. And I do think like the name Shockwave itself like might indicate some form of like post, you know, event type of show where you might get a reaction. Like it might be centered on reactions. It might be like one of those sort of like stitched together. I hate to call them just highlight shows, but like, you know, shows that are based on the main core. The events of the main core, maybe just kind of diluting the best of, you know, what happens on Wednesdays and Saturdays into like an hour that catches you up on storylines. I don't think we can completely discount that idea.
Last one here is Corey. Hey, John and Wei, real longtime listener, first time writer. Just wanted to thank you guys for the years of entertainment. The two of you are the soundtrack to car rides with my toddler, boring moments at work, and even my showers. See, this is where I feel guilty sometimes about some of my jokes. Dynamite was a great show. Could Mark Briscoe be a dark horse, a dark horse for best on the mic in 2024?
Depends what you
maybe
mean by
to some,
best.
You know, he's...
Like best is so vague. I mean, typically when we're choosing our awards, like we might decide best meaning what is drawing the most money, you know, who is being responsible for who's the most consistent at drawing money with their words. I think Mark Briscoe thus far has like delivered very entertaining promos in a very unique style, but I wouldn't call them, at least not at the level of like, you know, let's say people that we've considered, you know, that level of promo at the past. Mark Briscoe isn't put into those positions. So not yet, at least. So I wouldn't say so for me.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for your feedback, for tuning in later tonight for Rewind to Dynamite. I guess we will be back doing Dynamite next Tuesday night. So that will be, I guess, the plan.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we got Up Next that evening as well. So maybe we'll talk to Braden and Davey about how we all want to handle coverage that evening. But
well, they're going
to
be ending at different times, right? So I mean, there'll still be probably some crossover. But anyway, we will figure that out. I will assume
we will overlap for 1 hour of the review.
Well, yeah. I just remember last year we tried doing it all four of us and it was a nightmare and that's great. We're not doing that again. So anyway, we will have reviews of NXT and Dynamite next week. So look out for that check out our socials. Okay. We'll make an announcement after the show. But that's it for us. Wei and I are back Thursday. Rewind away covering Sakura Genesis 2017. Is that your viewing coming up after we finish recording tonight?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
we're going to talk about most of the card. I'm not watching this entire card. That's I'm going to talk about the key matches. That's my caveat. But we'll have a big discussion about New Japan in 2017 and a really a tragic match in many ways, but also one that was critically acclaimed as well at the time, even given the horrible outcome that it had for Shibata. But that's coming up on Thursday. And then Friday night, Neil Flanagan will be with Wei Ting for Rewind to SmackDown. And then I'm back on Saturday with Wei for Bad Blood. And Sunday, getting together with Eric Marcotte for a UFC 307 review. So that's all coming up this weekend. And a post-ProRes will be dropping in the coming days. So lots to check out. Postwrestling.com and brand new month. Sign up.
postwrestlingcafe.com. Check out the Mr. McMahon series. All six episodes are up there and plenty more. Good night.